Hello and welcome again. My name is Eric Kasky. I'm a visiting instructor in ophthalmology and visual sciences at the University of Utah in Moran Eye Center. And I'm here with a couple of my partners.
Hi, I'm Kathleen Degree. I'm a professor of ophthalmology and neurology, also at the University of Utah and the Moran Eye Center.
And I'm Dr. Bradley Katz, professor of ophthalmology and neurology at the University of Utah and the Moran Eye Center. We have a quick conflict of interest statement. Dr. Degree and I are named on a patent describing the use of optical filters for the treatment of migraine and other light-sensitive conditions. I'm the chief medical officer of an online company that develops and markets eyewear for light-sensitive conditions and am named on a patent describing the use of optical nanoparticle filters for the treatment of light-sensitive conditions.
So this podcast may be the most interesting one for our listeners, and that's all about the treatment of photophobia. What can we do to help our patients? So Dr. Katz, what's kind of the first rule of treatment for photophobia?
So the goal is to treat the underlying cause. And as we talked about in our previous podcast on the approach to the diagnosis, you know, that far and away the most common cause of photophobia as a primary complaint in a patient with a normal eye exam is going to be migraine. It's number one, two, and three. But then right after that, you know, some of the other things we talked about that are very common are going to be blepharospasm and then patients dealing with a traumatic brain injury. And really the way you make the photophobia better in those patients is by treating the underlying cause. And so maybe we should first talk about migraine. So Dr. Degree, what would you say are the basics for migraine prevention from the perspective of a comprehensive ophthalmologist who's counseling a patient who they think has migraine as the basis of their photophobia?
So we just start with non-medication treatments for migraine, and it's really basic preventative things that we use for many other diseases and disorders. First, kids need to sleep. If they're not sleeping, their migraine will never be under control. Second, regular eating patterns are extremely important because if you skip meals, it can frequently trigger people's migraine. And staying hydrated. Sometimes, especially if you live in a desert area, hydration is critical to staying migraine-free. We live in such a stressful period of time. I think stress reduction training should be offered to every single person who has migraine and for anybody who has photophobia. And frequently, we will actually prescribe cognitive behavioral therapy. In a study that was done on children and migraine, having these basic preventive strategies with some cognitive behavioral therapy was as efficacious as putting kids on medications like amitriptyline and topiramate. And so I really think that's something an ophthalmologist could do, is stress these lifestyle issues that can be so important for children and adolescents and even adults.
Yeah, you know, I find that, you know, as a comprehensive ophthalmologist, you know, that you know, you may not have the training, you know, to go beyond these kind of conservative lifestyle changes. And so in that case, if those things are ineffective, your best bet is going to be team up with a neurologist in your community to help confirm the diagnosis and make some treatment recommendations. But there are still some other things that you could do as an ophthalmologist. And, you know, one of the things that we've, you know, that's been shown to be effective is FL41 tint. So this is a tint that was first developed in Birmingham, England, and in a paper back in the late 90s, it was shown to be very effective in reducing the frequency and severity of migraine in children. There is some confusion about blue blockers, and you know, these blue blocker lenses that you see advertised, you know, on late night TV, they really don't block the wavelengths of light that are responsible for causing photophobia, and so they're just not going to be effective in this instance. I do have, you know, there are these things called Erlin lenses that were developed by I believe she's a clinical psychologist. And, you know, there's really not any scientific evidence to back up their use in light sensitivity and other conditions. But on the other hand, I have a few patients in my practice that swear by them and say that they've been helpful, you know, either for dyslexia or for migraines or for light sensitivity or for other things. And so I even though there isn't any science behind them, like if your patient wants to go out and try them, I wouldn't poo-poo them. I mean, you're just trying to help them any way you can. Oh, and the other thing that, you know, as ophthalmologists that you shouldn't forget is dry eyes, because at a study we actually did here at the University of Utah, we found that almost all patients who have chronic migraine also have dry eye symptoms. And so lubricating the ocular surface, you know, just getting them on some dry eye treatment can not only make their eyes better, it makes their photophobia better, and it can also reduce central sensitization and maybe reduce the frequency and severity of their headaches.
Dr. Cass, isn't it uncommon for kids to have dry eye?
Yeah, I mean, it is uncommon, but it happens. You know, every now and then a kid pops into your clinic and, you know, and they definitely have dry eye signs and symptoms. And so it's, again, something I would not rule out just because the patient sitting in front of you isn't an adult.
And then remember, there are even systemic conditions that can be associated with dry eye symptoms, especially Sjogren's syndrome, which again is more of an adult problem and very uncommon in kids. And then there are some other genetic conditions, some chromosomal abnormalities that kids can, you know, have, and photophobia can be one of the major symptoms, and treating them with FL41 tinted lens sometimes can be helpful.
So Kathleen, let's move on to the number two, you know, which is blepharospasm, which of course is much more common in adults, but as we'd said in earlier podcast, that it can also happen in kids. What sorts of things do you recommend for those patients?
Well, I would start with making sure they don't have dry eyes, because you can treat that. And then we've used FL41 tint in studies that we did here at the Moran Eye Center. We found that the FL41 tinted lens really could reduce the blinking severity and force by using the FL41 tinted lens. There are other treatments for blepharospasm. Sometimes we've had to use onabotulinum toxin, which has been very helpful in adults and could be tried in children, although I would try less invasive treatments first, like the FL41.
Yeah, sometimes I have patients that, you know, for one reason or another are kind of afraid of using botulinum toxin. And so there are some systemic treatments that can be effective. You know, we've just had a handful of patients that had some relief with Strattera, which is actually an ADHD drug, but it's all very anecdotal. And, you know, any systemic treatment that you prescribe has the potential for having side effects.
Perfect. So our last big one is traumatic brain injury. And as Dr. Greer was saying earlier, very common. So something every ophthalmologist will come across. Consulting a TBI clinic would, of course, be helpful. But Dr. Cass, do you have some other guidelines for treating patients with traumatic brain injury?
You know, from a comprehensive ophthalmology standpoint, most of the patients that are coming in to your clinic with photophobia associated with a traumatic brain injury, that's usually going to be a mild traumatic brain injury. And I heard somebody quoted just not too long ago saying that the definition of a mild traumatic brain injury is, you know, when the traumatic brain injury happens to somebody else, because any traumatic brain injury that happens to you is no one's going to consider that to be mild, because it disrupts so many things with memory and cognition and personality. Like, it, even a mild traumatic brain injury can be, you know, extremely disruptive. But as an ophthalmologist, if you're there to address the photophobia, You know, FL41 again can be effective in these patients, and if they have dry eyes, you know, in addition, you can treat that easily, and you can reassure them that their eyes and their visual system weren't damaged, you know, as part of their head injury, and that can be, you know, very reassuring to the patient. And then, you know, when you're getting down to treating the underlying condition, that's best done by a traumatic brain injury clinic, a comprehensive traumatic brain injury clinic, especially one that's interested in treating mild traumatic brain injury. That can be super helpful because they're going to bring in, people that help with the headaches and occupational therapy and physical therapy and all the other things that these people need to, you know, reassemble their life.
And Dr. Degree, if, of course, be helpful if you have a TBI clinic that you can send your patients to, but what could a comprehensive ophthalmologist do if there's not a TBI clinic available?
Well, then I think I would send them to a neurologist, a pediatric neurologist, if you have one, if not, a neurologist, because a lot of the symptoms will be headache and they'll feel much more comfortable taking care of headaches in that situation. You can also refer people to physical therapy, occupational therapy. If they're having cognitive problems, neuropsychologists are really helpful in this regard and can set things up as well. So don't shy away from getting people who have chronic photophobia due to a traumatic brain injury help.
Yeah, and if you're not fortunate enough to have a traumatic brain injury clinic in your community, you know, you might be able to convince the patient to travel to a tertiary care center where they do have a comprehensive traumatic brain injury clinic, even if it's just for one visit, because then, you know, the team can, you know, evaluate the patient and put together a treatment plan that can then be brought back to the home community, but at least, you know, confirm the diagnosis and get treatment lined up and setting down the right path.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Dr. Cass and Dr. Degree. Just as a quick summary, and we went over the treatment options for some of the most common causes of photophobia, including migraine, dry eye, blepharospasm, and traumatic brain injury, and some helpful tips and guidelines for your general comprehensive ophthalmologist. Thank you again.
And just a reminder to everyone that this podcast is part of a comprehensive curriculum for the diagnosis and treatment of photophobia in children. And for more information about the curriculum, you can contact me, bradley.katz, K-A-T-Z, at hsc.utah.edu. And although we offer this curriculum freely, it's protected by copyright held by the University of Utah and shouldn't be rebroadcast without permission of the university.